Hey guys, welcome to The Aztec Show. I'm Gargi Priyadarshini Das, and this is season 2, episode 9. And today we'll be discussing about some true horror and crime stories. So the first one is a crime story of Jeanette Mayo, a young 9-year-old girl living in California, Silicon Valley. So this is a story of 2003 when Jeanette Tamayo was one of those unfortunate few who were reported as kidnapped. But because of the 9-year-old kept her cool like few would, she managed to live and tell her story and bring about the arrest of her captor. On June 6, 2003, Jeanette was coming home from school when a man followed her into her house in San Jose, California. When her mother and brother arrived at home shortly after there, he beat both of them severely, handcuffed Jeanette, stuffed her into a box in the backseat of his car. As police searched, her parents prayed. Experts say that if the abductor intends to kill a victim, the murder will take place within the first few hours of abdication. So the story goes something like, after coming from school, Jeanette was getting into her room and she noticed something odd. All the windows of the house were broken. So when she tried to reach her mother, she noticed that even the landline was not working. Then suddenly someone appeared behind the slide and started knocking. She was confused and a bit terrified, but somehow she opened the door. And to her horror, a stranger was standing in front of her. He asked a few questions. Then he grabbed her by her hair and took her into her brother's room. There he assaulted her for about 30 minutes. Then after that, he put her into the garage. And after that, her mother and her brother, they arrived somehow. And the garage door slid up a little bit. As her brother noticed, he peeked into it. All he could see was his sister, totally tied by her legs and hands. Jeanette shouted, "Run!" But before he could run or take any measures to protect her sister, the abdicator came and attacked her brother with a screwdriver. Then he grabbed him and took him into the kitchen, where he even found out his mother was there. Her brother quickly reached out for a frying pan and tried to attack the abductor, but he unarmed him and rather attacked with the frying pan. And he struck Rosalyn, who was Jeanette's mother, until she was totally flat on the ground. And then he returned to Jeanette, who was there, totally tied in the garage. Jeanette looked at him and asked, "Are they no more? Did you kill them?" And he laughed while she started crying. He took her and put her into a small box in the backseat of his car, and they started moving. Jeanette continued crying, looking back for the last time. She thought that maybe this is the last time she's seeing her house. But finally, she was relieved that her mother was running behind, fully covered with blood on her face, and then even his brother limping behind her mother. Even though she was harmed and was scared that what next will be happening to her, but still she was relieved to see that both her mother and her brother were alive. After that, the abductor took Jeanette to his house, fully handcuffed, in a second story bedroom where there was just a bedroom, a bathroom, a kitchen, and the man threatened to kill the young girl and sexually abused her for 2 days. Jeanet said she was scared, but her actions show that she was cool-headed and resourceful too. She knew she couldn't escape him by physical force. Then Jeanet claims that the abductor often abused her and then threw her into the shower for a few seconds, for a few minutes. And she knew that when she was in the shower, it was her safe place, as that was the point of time when the abductor didn't touch her or didn't abuse her. And then in the second day of abdication, Jeanet just came to the hall and she noticed that her abductor, day two of Jeanette's abduction. Jeanet came to the bedroom after taking a shower, and she noticed that the abductor was watching news where her sister, cousin sister, her mother, her brother, everyone was talking to her through the TV. They were saying that, Jeanet, please stay strong. We are looking for you. The police is searching. You'll be safe. Have courage. And that actually brought courage into our little Jeanette's heart. So then Jeanet decided that she has to do something to escape from her she. So first thing she thought of was to gain trust of that man. So she went to the man and asked him. She was trying to act as naive and as innocent as she could. She asked him that, where are you from? With a smile. And it was the first time after kidnapping her, the man smiled as well. Bridget felt disgusted and felt like spitting into his face, but she had to stay calm. So, ignoring her gut feeling, she smiled back. And then the man asked, do you want water? And she said, yes, with a smile. Then the man took her to the bed and he uncuffed her. And then Bridget realized that the handcuff she was wearing for so long didn't need any keys. It was all mechanized and just needed a button to be pressed. So as the man walked down to get some water, she uncuffed herself and started finding for some evidence, so that maybe if later, even if she's dead, the detective could find or could use those evidence to punish the man. Then soon after, Jeanet started collecting the toys that the man gave her to play with. She got her underwear from the bathroom because she claims that she and her brother often used to watch Law and Order and such shows. Then suddenly, the little Jeanet gets startled because she hears the footstep of the man, and that means he's coming upstairs. So quickly, she just hides everything that she has found, and she again handcuffs herself and sits on the bed like an innocent child. Third day of kidnapping. So, and by the time, everyone who loved Jeanet was scared that they might lose her forever. But still, her mother had some hope, and she asked the police officer that, when will I get to see my daughter? But they were scared to answer her because they claimed that 48 hours had already passed, and almost every kid that has been kidnapped is dead by now. So maybe there are chances that you'll never be able to see her. Her mother screams and screams and then says, I want my daughter. It's been 3 days. I haven't seen her. Please bring her to me. And the police continues with his work. So coming to Jeanette's part, again, she was continue acting as an innocent child. So the man again asked her, are you hungry? She said, yeah, get me some food. And he was like, okay. The man had a cell phone. He handed it over to Jeanet and asked her to call and order a pizza. So the clever Jeanet asked that, what's your address? And whatever he answered, little Jeanet noted it all down and totally memorized it. She was collecting each and every possible evidence that she can collect, because whatever she was going through, she wanted to make that man pay. So she totally memorized it and called. She was talking to the cashier and ordered a pizza. After 30 minutes, the pizza arrived, and the man came and kept the pizza box with a flyer on it, on which it was written missing with Jeanette's face on it. And to Jeanette's terror, the man said that, I need to get rid of you tonight. Jeanet was totally devastated, and bit by bit, time by time, she was losing hope. Then the man suddenly came with a pillow, pushed it against her face and tried cried and was smothering her with it. And when the last breath of Janet was about to go, she pushed him and gave her best. The disgusted man left her in the shower again and went down for some work. Suddenly, they heard someone knocking loudly. The man rushed upstairs and held Janet by her mouth because he was scared that she might shout. And all over San Jose, there was news that this little girl, Janet Tamayo, was missing. So the man ran upstairs and held her. And then after, while the knocking was totally gone, was totally silent, the man held her by her hair and again grabbed her and pulled her to the back seat and threw her there. By the time, Janet was totally horrified and she started screaming. Then he started driving. Janet kept screaming, but nobody was there to hear her. Then, but clever Janet was noticing every turns and twist that the road that was leading. Then finally, they reached to a place and she asked, "Where are we?" The man left her on the road and said, "I'm leaving you. I'm letting go of you. Now, if you inform the police about me, give them any information or anything, I'm gonna kill you and your family." And then he left. And then there was a store near. Janet went inside. There she saw the cashier. And the cashier quickly recognized her. He asked, "Aren't you the girl gone missing like 2 days ago?" And she was like, "Yes." The cashier handed over a cell phone to her and asked her to call. But she was shivering very bad, so he himself called 911. The police arrived and detectives were also there. The main detective, Randall Heather, she was pleased and really happy to meet the little girl's eyes. And as they asked her, "Are you okay? Is everything fine?" Without answering a single question, clever Janet handed them every evidence that she collected. She gave them those toys, her underwear, and everything. And she even asked them for a paper where she drew the color of the house and how it looked, the address, and that man's phone number. The detective was surprised to see how clever the little girl was, and they asked, "Can you lead us to this house?" And she was like, "Yes, maybe I can." And then she said, "I can just instruct. I can just direct right or left." And at the end, they did reach their destination. The culprit was arrested, and after 6 years of being traumatized and getting therapies, Janet finally let go of her fears and explored her surroundings, because for this, after reuniting with her mother and her brother, she wasn't leaving her house. So after 6 years, she finally decided that she needs to be a voice for those victims of violence and those little kids. So with the help of Detective Randall Heather, she started studying law enforcement, and now she even got enrolled in Police Academy. End of the story, happy ending. Now, if even you are traumatized by her story, then let me bring something even more disturbing. Coming to a true horror story. Many of you must have heard about it, but again, the story of Annabelle. So, presenting true story of Annabelle. One thing that scares the heck out of people is toy dolls. To Chucky, to the boy, there's just something about those blank expression and glass moving eyes that wigs out people. But I guess probably the creepiest and the popular is Annabelle, as she has a true story behind it. The movie shows that a doll is given to a nurse, and she started acting weird one day and things get scary. Well, it is inspired by this true story, but there is actually a lot of difference between the actual one and the movie. Started in 1970, a mother gave a Raggedy Ann doll to her daughter, whose name is Dida, and people also call her as Dorna. So on her 28th birthday, the mother gave to her daughter, which is actually a bit odd that the daughter is too old to receive a doll as a gift, but cute at the same time. So Dida was a nurse who lived with her roommate in same apartment building, and even her roommate was a nurse. They worked together. So After getting this present by her mother, she was really attached to it. She took her, she took that doll to the bed with her. With time, it wasn't long enough when she started noticing that her sweet, cuddly doll acted super weird. First thing she noticed was that it used to move to different sitting places. Like if in the bed, she used to take her to bed with her. So if she took kept it beside her head, in the morning she would see that it's in a different place in the same room. And second time he noticed that it was moving room to room. It was changing of place from one room to another. So and after that she started taking keeping her doll with her even while having her breakfast. The nurses, both the nurses found that her hands were moving, the doll was floating, and the nurses oddly find it interesting. So the interested nurses found a medium to talk to it, and the spirit in the Raggedy Ann doll revealed that it is the spirit of Annabelle Higgins, who is a girl who passed away or probably murdered at a very young age near the apartment they lived in. Annabelle was a lonely and sensed kindness in two nurses, and she asked if they could make some place or make her the part of their home. The surprised and kind nurses immediately agreed, and for me, I want to consider them really freaking brave, because I would have like fainted or moved or have changed my apartment or called some tantric babas to like figure this stuff out. Like, I'm really scared of such stuff. Jokes apart, the nurses immediately welcomed her and treated her, gave her clothes, bracelets to wear, and treated her like real human, like whatever the doll wanted. But unfortunately, the sweet animal was about to show her true colors. She wasn't at all what they thought. And as the time passed, as the day passed, she became weird and weird. And they started experiencing scary stuff. Like they would hear knock-knock sounds. The room would get cold out of nowhere. And creepy whispers. They were totally freaked out, but still somehow they were okay with it. I don't know how. So one night after the two of the nurses shift were over, as they were working together, so then shift was over at the same time, they got back home and saw that Annabelle was standing in the hallway as if she was waiting for their arrival. But one thing that we need to keep in mind, that she was a doll with floppy legs, and there's no way she can like stand straight and wait for someone. So after that, she fell, and they tried a lot of time to make her stand in the same posture as she used to, but it was kind of impossible. Then after getting to know about all this, one of the nurses had a fiance, so he said to get rid of that doll or burn her. Actually, burning her is a good idea, but you know what's the huge mistake was? Saying or uttering all this word in front of that doll. So that was the big mistake. After that, on that same night, her fiance had a terrifying nightmare in which he saw that Annabelle was strangling him. Suddenly, he woke and he threw Annabelle. Actually, Annabelle was like beside him. So he woke up and threw Annabelle and yelled at her. Suddenly, seven big scratches appeared on his body. And that was not scary enough, that even after that, the nurses kept getting creepy messages on parchment paper. And the weirdest part is none of them own a parchment. So they assumed that maybe someone is breaking into their house, or and they started testing it only if to see the result that they were proved wrong. The doors were totally okay and intruder free. It was an intruder free apartment. So of course we know who to blame, their new housemate. And after that, things kept getting creepier. They saw blood, and like such whispers kept getting, blood drooping and drooling. So they were so terrified that then they went to a church and called for help. So the priest in there called a paranormal professional who they knew, and to clear these stuffs. And you must have noticed a character in Conjuring. They were Ed and Lauren, the Warren couples. So they actually existed, if you don't know. They were not just a character in Conjuring, but they actually existed and had their own, like, testing the stuffs. And like, over the years, they had already, like, before getting this case, they had already went to, like, search for about 10,000 haunted house and kids. So in 1970, this Razzity and Dolls case was going to their head, like, nerve. It was going to be their major case. So if you have heard or seen the Warren couple's interviews, then they talk about three stages of demonic possession, which is the infestation, that is you'll hear some sound activities like whispering, knocking, and then operation, and then finally possession. So in 1971, the Razzity Ann was their first like major case. Horrified to know that they were treating the Annabelle as a real person, because as I mentioned before, that the Warrens believed that there are three stages of demonic possession, and they are infestation, that is the sound of activities, and then operation, which even includes that treating the Annabelle as a real human being. And they had a very good idea of what she was and what capabilities she possessed. So exorcism was required, which was a really risky ceremony. And in the Catholic Church, only this Warren couple were allowed to perform. And of course, as we all know, the doll was much powerful. So it made this ritual even riskier. Then as they came to their apartment for investigation and everything, after everything was completed, they decided to take Annabelle with them. Dada was really relieved that they reached out to her to help her. And the best thing was they were taking her. The Warren agreed. And the main reason for taking her was for safekeeping. Like, it wasn't safe anymore to keep Annabelle in their house with them. And after treating the Annabelle as a real person, that was almost making her even more powerful and fulfilling her desires. While the whole journey of the Warrens from Dada's apartment to their house, the journey wasn't that safe. The car kept breaking down. And of course, we all know again who to blame. Then, after reaching home, they splashed the holy water on her, but it was pretty scary and like still the creepiest and creeping as well, still upcoming. So as the time passed, then again the next day, Ed Warrens, he noticed that Annabelle was floating beside his desk. And like, even with them, the creepy and the scary activities kept continuing. Then they thought of reaching out a priest. As the priest arrived, he looked at the doll and threw it across the room. But at that time, nothing happened. But while the priest was traveling back to his house, guess what? He got into a major accident, and but hopefully he survived. But when the Warren couple asked him that what exactly happened, was it because of her? But and of course, we all know who it is. We all know who to blame, part three. So it was again Annabelle. The priest confessed that the last image he saw after he lost his senses due to the accident was Annabelle's. The last image was Annabelle's image. So after that, the incidents kept continuing, but at a point of dying, somehow they got rid of her. But, or maybe it seemed like that, because they had a museum, which is known as the Occult Museum, where they kept all those scary stuff they brought from their investigation. So they kept her in there as well, but and took some measures to, because as we know that she was really dangerous, really powerful, so they even took the measure, performed some rituals so that she won't harm anyone and be there at one place. But their measures were not strong enough. And one day, two college students who were couples as well, boyfriend, girlfriend, they were just giving a look in the museum. And the guy, I don't know know what got into his mind, or maybe he was mad, intended to die. He mocked to slash Annabelle and said that he used very disrespectful and words like he would kill her, and that he was basically mocking her for some reason. As Ed Warren got to know about it, he threw that couple out of the museum and asked them to get out of here as soon as possible. So the couple, the boyfriend and the girlfriend, came there by a motorcycle. So they rode the motorcycle and were getting back to the house. On the way, again, they got into a huge accident. And almost the exact things happened to the guy that he was mocking about, the rugby and Dawn, that is Annabelle. So, and of course, not a surprising thing, the guy was dead at the spot. And the girlfriend somehow survived, but she was hospitalized for 1 year. And as Ed says in his interview, that you shouldn't challenge a devil. So, like, this is almost the end of the story. And if you want to know about, like, Warrens and Case, then they were even involved in many of paranormal activities. And I said they had their own center for researching about such stuff. Then they even, like, got into those Amityville Horror's house, like, in 1975, where you must have heard the story if you are, like, horror stories lover. Then an evil spirit in this story of Amityville Horror's, 1975, an evil spirit who was in a cursed house tormented a family very bad, that they left and ran out of the house in the middle of the night. And later the story got to be very famous, and there was a series of 11 movies on this. But one thing, like, I always wonder about, if in that occult museum, if it was really scary and consisted of such dangerous stuff, then why was even public allowed even to like get a look on the stuff? But end of Annabelle. Okay, so now if you're again traumatized by this horror true story, then okay, this time I guess you won't be traumatized that much, because this is a normal solved crime scene. So it's a story of Anna and Abulaban. So Abulaban, Ali Abulaban, was a TikToker, a TikTok celebrity. He had over 1 million followers and was mostly known for making videos in pop culture. If you have ever heard or like seen his videos, then you must have seen his wife as well. He had a wife, Anna, who uploaded videos as well. So, like, you must have seen his wife joining in. So the couple would dance, laugh, make videos together, tease each other, and even had a 5-year-old daughter. So they were, like, really adorable, cute couple who were madly in love. The audience assumed that they had every happiness that a human would ever desire for. The beautiful couple lived in an apartment in California very happily, or maybe so it seemed. Anna was 1993 born Filipino kid who later moved to United States for her own reasons later in life. So the outsiders, the audience, saw her as a kind, compassionate lady. And but as she continued achieving success in her life as a social media influencer and stuff, her relationship started deteriorating. Ali was possessive. He saw her as a beautiful possession and never wanted to lose her. So to keep things in control, his aggressive, dominant personality added one more feature of being violent. So they worked really hard to conceal their relationship and even appeared on screen the same way they used to. But again, he resented her spending time with her friends and stuff. So things really got worse time prototype, and his behavior got even violent. So, and like within no time, he turned into a psychopath, or I guess that's the best word I can use for men like Ali Abu Laban. So later with time, Ali's behavior got more disturbing. His behavior got more disturbing, and at a point of time, like he started showing up, like Ali started showing up in his lives with alcohol and drugs. In the beginning, the fans thought that maybe it's a skit, but they found out that it was actual drug. After which, Ali even showed up with a weak apology. He said that he claimed that it was his first time using drug, and after knowing how dangerous it is, he is quitting it. But he never did. So, and again by time, he started showing up in his life, like he's drinking. And in one of his lives, he was drinking and driving, which was fans got really furious. So then after a few days, after so much of violence that Anna was suffering through, she one day reported it to the police that Ali had pushed her, and she even got some minor injuries. Then furious Anna started complained and got the restraining orders. Then she asked Ali to move out of the apartment they were living in. Even Ali's family supported Anna and begged Ali to give her some space. But Ali was in no plan of leaving Anna alone. So one day, while their daughter, 5 years old kid, was in school and Anna was out of the house, Ali broke into their apartment. They snuck out and he installed an app in her daughter's iPad just to spy. And while leaving, he trashed and vandalized their house. So the time passed and he kept spying on her. One day, through that app through which he was spying, he noticed and heard that Anna was really happy. She was giggling, she was laughing. And with her, she heard a male voice. And that idiot assumed that maybe she's cheating on him. And that was a point of the time that he couldn't think straight. But of course, behind the scenes, like we know, the man with whom Anna was talking wasn't his lover or anyone, but he was just a friend named Rubber. He was a 29-year-old man. He was just a friend. So, as that psychopath was not in a mentality to think incorrect direction, he directly drove towards the apartment, went inside, and again saw that Anna and Robert was having a conversation. The report says that he 3 times attacked Robert and directly shot Anna on head. Then Ali just went out of there and picked her daughter up, called her mother, and even confessed to both of them, to the little kid, that her mommy is dead, and even told her mother that mom, sorry, but I think I shot her and she is dead. And now Ali is behind the bars, and still he claims that it wasn't his fault, or he's not guilty, but if convicted, then he may be facing death penalty. End of the story. So again, coming back to a horror story. The story is about Veronica. I am pretty sure that you all must have seen that movie. Actually, it is based on a true story. A girl who was a teenage girl who was trying to reach out her father but ended up calling a demon. So if we talk about the actual story, then it's the story of 1991 and media stress, with emergency services responding to a call from a young girl. She sounds panicked and screamed about something coming to get her brother before the call cuts off. Then it was 3 days back that Veronica, a 15 years old girl living with her mother and 3 young siblings in an apartment in working class district of Vallecas, Madrid. Their father recently died and their mother works long hours at a bar to support the family, leaving Veronica, the girl, 15 year old girl, in charge of her younger siblings, twins Lucia and Irene, and Antonito. On the day of solar eclipse, her teacher explains how some ancient cultures culture used to stage human sacrifices and summon dark spirits. So Veronica and her friends Rosa and Dinah go into the basement to conduct a seance using an Ouija board. Veronica wants to reach out to her late father, Diana, her late boyfriend who died in a motorcycle accident. So Rosa and Dinah pull out their hands back when a glass cup becomes too hot. Veronica's hand remains on it. And at the moment of eclipse, the cup shatters, cutting her finger and dropping her blood onto the board. Now Veronica becomes unresponsive, whispering something repeatedly and then lets out a demonic scream. She wakes in the school nurse's office, who tells her she probably passed out from iron deficiency. Then after that, Veronica begins experiencing paranormal occurrences and her friends start avoiding her. Now looking for answers, she goes back to the school basement and finds the school's elderly blind nun whom the students call Sister Death. The nun explains that the seance attached a dark spirit to her and tries to compel the spirit to leave, but nothing happens. Veronica draws protective wicking symbols for the kids, like her siblings, only for the demon to destroy them, which means the scenario, the story even got worse. She tries to help Lucia when the spirit chokes her, but Lucia says it was Veronica who was choking her. Veronica wakes up to find that she's on her first period. As she scrubs her mattress, she finds out burn marks on the underside. She also finds on each of the kids' mattresses a large burn mark in the shape of human body. Sister Death tells Veronica that she used to see dark spirits when she was younger and intentionally blinded herself in an unsuccessful attempt to stop vision. Veronica can force the spirits to leave by doing right what she did wrong, as it is important to say goodbye to this spirit at the end of the seance. Veronica asks Rosa and Dinah to hold another seance, but they refuse. Rosa reveals that at the seance, Veronica whispered that she herself would die in 5 days. Desperate, Veronica decides to hold the seance with her siblings. She has Antonito draw the protective symbols on the walls, but he flips to the wrong page and instead draws symbol of invocation. When she tells the spirit to say goodbye, it refuses. She calls the police and escapes with her siblings. However, she sees that she is not actually holding Antonito, but had imagined it. Her brother is actually hiding in a closet. She finds him, but he won't go with her. Veronica looks at herself in the mirror and sees the demon, realizing she has been possessed by the demon the entire time and had been harming her siblings under its control. She attempts to end the possession by slitting her own throat, but prevented by demon. The police enter to find her being attacked by an invisible force and passing out. The medics carry her and Antonito out while a shaken detective observes the scene. As the detective watches, a photograph of Veronica suddenly catch fire. He informed that she has died. 5 years later, in 1996, he reports of unexplained paranormal activity having occurred in Madrid. It is explained that even the movie, which is inspired by this, is based on true events of first police report in Spain, where a police officer certifies having witnessed paranormal activity. Thank you so much for listening. And I have a question. Have you ever experienced something like this, something paranormal or something severe event in your life? Then do poll below. Stay tuned.